This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
All right, 2 weeks in to this one hand lifestyle, and I'm very proud of all the things I've accomplished with one hand. But I have figured out the one thing I cannot do with just my left hand, and that is to lotion my left arm. I cannot moisturize. I'm ashy in the motherfucker right now, man.
You can't put the lotion on its skin.
It hurts, man.
What is TWS podcast, episode whatever, who cares at this point?
The rant of the vindicator.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rip. We're gonna keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
When's ready.
I feel like the end is
staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn, ready.
Knowing you the best part of life, do I have the right to take yours? Because I created you irresponsibly. Subconsciously knowing the act, I was a part of the start of something. I'm not ready to bring it to the world. Had myself believing I was sterile. I look at your mother's stomach and wonder if you are a boy or a girl. Turning this woman's wound into a tomb. But she and I agree. A seed we don't need. You would have been much more than a mouth to feed. But someone, I would have fed this information I read to someone.
For you, I would have had to lead. Instead, I led you to death. Sorry for taking your first steps, first breath, and first cry, but I wasn't prepared mentally or financially. Having a child shouldn't have to bring out the man in me. Plus, I wanted you to be raised within the family. Like, some deep shit. Anyway,
heavyweight words.
Welcome to another episode of the What Is TWS podcast. As always, I'm your boy, J.Dot Flan, representing the White Pants Society. And I want to thank you, first and foremost, for taking a little bit of time out of your day to chill with me, talk about whatever it is we're going to talk about, and just, I don't know, have some fun. You could be anywhere else in the world, but you're here with me, and I greatly appreciate that. So, yeah. Now that that's out the way, let me introduce this dude I got sitting across from me. Y'all know him well. I got to make sure I say it correctly.
He said MF, aka Alexander MF. Mother Flowers.
Weezy F Baby Rules.
The whole way, man. Or no way at all.
Man, no way at all. We got Alexander MF with us this afternoon, and... how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling very low key right now. I mean, like slow mo. More important, like I think that's a better word for it. Slow mo. I'm feeling slow mo.
Slow mo.
Today is just Usa moment.
Take it slow. Take it slow. Take it
slow. That's it. I've been burning the candle at both ends, so I'm taking it hella slow. I ain't did nothing except for the things I had to do, and still I had to fight to make that happen.
I got you. You know, life is what it is. Sometimes. But yeah, I don't know. We just going to have, you know what we do. We just have conversations. We talk about stuff. So glad to have you with me. We have a few things on the docket. I asked social media this week what I should talk about. And a few things got mentioned. And some of them jive with some things. That was funny. What's funny, dog?
I just think it's funny how everybody in the world is like, fucking Texas right now.
We don't look good, bro.
And that's what came back.
And it's crazy that I say we. Like, I really have.
You own it, though.
I mean, I guess I've been here. Yeah, I've been here. What?
You file your taxes over here. They're going to consider you a Texan.
I'm almost 9 years in. So
how far do you got to go before you're official?
10. You tell me. You more of a Texan than I am.
Yeah, I've been here since 94.
I've been here since January 1st, 2013, bro.
January the 1st of 13.
I moved here on New Year's Day.
Damn, I was playing a show somewhere. No. Mm-mm. I wasn't playing a show somewhere. Was that when I was in Boston? Nope.
You can't remember. Don't try.
No, I remember. I was back in Killeen. Just got custody of the kids, man. Oh, okay. Cleaned up, sobered up, walking the line, staying on the beam. Working at a psychiatric hospital, making $10.50 an hour. That shit was crazy.
I guess we're going to talk a lot about kids today. I'm not going to do a Chef Elise update because of the injury. I'm still one-handed out here.
It's looking like Michael Jackson in love.
Is that what it looked like? I don't do that. We don't do that where I'm from. Nah, I used
do
to want to be
white socks with black shoes and black pants though.
I used to want to be Michael Jackson so bad.
I didn't want to be Michael Jackson.
Penny loafers and used to get like the slouch socks and stuff.
Bro,
like that.
I never had penny loafers, but I used to get my black shoes and put a penny in them, tied in the laces.
And I think I had either I must have dreamt that I had. I must have always wanted to have one of them beaded jackets. And in my memories somewhere, I had one. But I don't think I ever had one. One of them red leather joints with all the buttons and shit.
So we pulled up to a Chinese restaurant called Xing something. Xing. X-I-N-G something. I forgot.
Don't be racist.
On the other side, bro. It was great food, though. There's nothing racist about this. But their door, bro. Their door to the entry. I was like, that reminds me of Michael Jackson. It was the red leather jacket. I promise you, bro.
They had a red leather jacket door?
Nah, but the fucking door reminded me of the red leather jacket. Don't even come at me with that. I got a problem with seeing things.
You do, bro. You be always hitting me with, don't he look like this? Don't this dude look just like this?
Can you see the face in the painting downstairs?
No, sir. There's no face in the painting.
Bro, I'm going to show you.
You've already shown this.
I'm going to put a piece of paper over it, and I'm going to catch it, and I'm going
to
show you.
No, what I'm telling you is that you are adding a lot to make it a face. Like, I see what it is you're saying could be a face, but in order for that to be a face, you have to mentally put some shit on top of it.
It just happens. To make it a face. I don't look at it and be like, how do I turn that into a face? And how does this look like Michael Jackson's jacket?
I really think it's just an association game, man. I really think you do.
It's natural fulfillment.
I really think your brain is always looking for a way to like be so far out the box that it just finds shit that don't exist and be like, look at those. You was just hitting me, asking me. We just sat out there yesterday. Trying to figure out if some dude look like Raphael Sadiq, and they don't look nothing alike. Nothing alike.
I'm about to pull it up.
Nothing alike. Y'all can look it up. We're not gonna spend too much time on this, but the light skinned dude from Black Eyed Peas,
right?
The light skinned Hispanic dude from Black Eyed Peas.
He's Hispanic.
Or what? What is he?
Light skinned long haired dude from Black Eyed Peas. The
ethnic dude from Black Eyed Peas. He say he a light skinned version of Raphael Sadiq.
That's it. Go look it up and comment whether you agree or disagree.
All right, that's either you trying to say all brown people look alike, or I mean I don't know, but ain't nothing. It's not there, bro. It's not there. Anyway. All right. So I added social media, what we should talk about this week, and a couple things came up. So yeah, people want to hear my thoughts or our thoughts on the laws that have been passed in Texas recently. We'll get to those. People asked for an update on the book, and. Yeah, man, I've been working on it, and I'll tell you, all right, let me be completely honest. Where I'm at, and so I'm writing the book in, like, it's not written in chronological order, right? It's written in, like, areas of my life. So, like, I may tell the entire story of my life from the perspective of my relationship with family members, and that's a chapter.
Right.
And then I may tell the entire story of my life from the perspective of my relationship with music. Mm-hmm. And that's a chapter. And in both chapters, I may discuss the same events, but I'm discussing the same events from different perspectives.
From a different writer's podium.
But just, you know, because if I try to tell you the whole story and tell you what was going on with me musically, what was going on with me romantically, what was going on with me with family, what was going on with me with work, all at the same time.
Right.
It's too many pieces. It's too convoluted a story.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense.
But if I go back and tell the same story over and over again. But from, okay, this was what happened over here, and this is what was happening over here. And then in the end, it all comes together. So where I'm stuck right now is talking about my marriage.
Oh.
And I think it's not writer's block. It's just that I really don't want to.
You feel like there's some, like, level four type shit?
I don't know what level four type shit
like
is.
Like some four-step type shit.
Maybe, because
like,
a lot of it is
dredging up the
because definitely what I don't want to do in like telling these stories is ever come across as the victim. I don't feel like I'm a victim of anything. Like I feel like obviously some crazy shit happened, some unfortunate shit happened. Obviously it affected me. There's some trauma in there, but not all of it is. Was I not a willing participant in, or you know. My side of the street ain't clean.
Right.
And so yeah, in telling these stories, and especially when it gets down to the stuff with my ex-wife, like, you know, I don't want to, that's my daughter's mother, you know, so I don't ever want to paint her.
No slander.
In the wrong way. I want to be as honest as I can about what happened and the effect it had on me, just so if anybody else is going through something similar, like, the whole purpose of this is so people can play the tape for it. So you can kind of see the little things that happen in a person's life that may direct them to a certain place.
Have you prefaced that chapter with anything regarding like, let's state now, like I don't have any bad views on her.
I've prefaced
you know what I'm saying? an intro, like to, you know,
I'm trying not to be, I'm not trying to be too self-deprecating, because I feel what I'm trying to do. Like sometimes the trap I get caught in on this podcast is like, let me talk so much shit about myself that when I have something to say about somebody else, I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. Who cares what I think? I've already told you I'm a piece of shit, but I kind of don't like what this person did either. But I'm a piece of shit though, so don't even trip. Like I'm saying, I'm worse than you, but you ain't great.
So I find it funny at times how we talked about character assassination in the absence of people, right? Like that's not a good thing to talk shit about people when they're not around without the ability to listen and defend themselves.
Yeah.
But I do also feel that there is such thing as like true reporting, right? I'm not talking shit about the person. I'm saying this is what happened through my lens.
Exactly. So like, because I finished the chapter on like school life for me. Mm-hmm. And I go through this very detailed story of like elementary school and middle school and that kind of stuff. And when I was writing it at the end, I was like, man, I made it sound like school life for me was just fucking horrible. And so like toward the end of the chapter, I'm like, I could have told you this very same story and told you about this great time or this great time or this great time. But in the moment where I'm at right now, those aren't the things that I'm thinking about that are pertinent. So I'm letting you know, this is definitely a colored view of my life. But for people in those situations, it is always going to be a colored view.
I want to throw this in here real quick. Like part of what makes a book worthwhile and desirable by readers is the natural POV from the writer, right? And even when it gets to a point where they're like, and by the way, I could have mentioned that this was, how I felt and yada yada, but at this moment in my life, this is where it's coming from. To feel the heart of the person, to be able to read those words and see that that's coming from another human being out there is a part of the reading experience that makes it feel that much better, at least for myself. Like I like this, and I don't think there's nothing bad about it.
Because it's all from the perspective of like of this is the way your life flashes before your eyes in the moment that I'm telling this book from.
Sure.
That I'm writing this book from, and in that moment, the great times, the good times, the happy times are not the ones that come flooding all back at the same time.
I got you.
You know, I know that they're in there, you know, and I acknowledge the fact I don't at all want to sell it, because I am worried about like family members and my mom and stuff. Like I don't want them to feel like I'm saying my childhood was shitty and fucked up and nobody loved me or nothing like that. Like I'm not saying that. I'm saying things happened that if you're not in the state of mind to gravitate toward the positive, if you gravitate to these moments, like they start building on each other and it becomes a heap of stuff.
I think for those people in your life that are related to any of these stories and your past, right, and your upbringing, I think maybe it just hearing your roots and your how it looked from your height at your age and your size of shoes at the time, right? I think that regardless of how you may be concerned about their interpretation of it, I think that to them would just be badass.
Think so?
I do.
It's not narcissistic, no.
all of us have gone through life up until the point where you are currently speaking with me and I'm speaking with you at this moment on, you know what I mean? Sitting in these chairs across the room from each other, just like the people that are going to be listening to this in the next week or two. And up until that point, we've gained enough, some of us, wisdom, some of us a little bit less, due only to life experience and the tenure that we've served thus far, how long we've been alive, right? I feel like people at my mom and pops and you know, my aunts and uncles, because I don't have grandparents, they've been gone since one was alive when I was born and the rest of them were dead. But if your grandparents are alive, right, their filters are different than ours, man. Because of the amount of time that they've been walking and knowing things. I don't know that they would see that the same way as much as they'd be like, oh, my baby, I'm so proud of him. You know what I mean? I mean, that's how I think about it.
And they don't know me, you know,
personally, in depth like that?
Yeah, like, you know, and that's another reason why I want to write. That's the selfish part of me writing this is that I feel like there are a lot of people out there that have these very different opinions of me or views of me. And like I said, there are people, like how you view me, there are people who could tell you about a completely different guy and that would be unrecognizable to you. You might not even understand how somebody could feel that way about me, but that's a whole, you know. And so I don't think nobody has the full view. And so I think, yeah, to understand like where I am now and how I see things now, you need the full view. And you need, you know, some of the things that people think I do that are selfless are not. They are 100% selfish. They're 100% self-preservation. They're 100%, like I said, man, like I need all the karma points I can get. Because I wasn't always a nice guy. Not to that. So I'm, you know, feel like I can't take a day off on niceness. I'm working on it, though.
You working on trying to take a day off, or you working on trying to take more days in the week?
Yeah, if we could add a couple of days to the week where I could be nice to people and find stuff to do. What can Flan do for you?
What else? 25-8.
Let's go. All right, that's enough of the book update. All right, so let's get to the Texas. I want to start with this one because I know we have different points of view on it. Well, I feel like we probably have different points of view. The gun laws, the ability. So I know I asked you to be our factual guy to like understand. It's my understanding that the law is just like it's pretty much an expansion of open carry. Like you don't even have to be licensed anymore.
So I think open carry is a separate thing.
Okay.
This is about the requirement to like be vetted before you can buy a firearm off the shelf. So I don't have to run your name now through a database. Wait. Pause. Let me think about that. Let me do a little bit more skimming before I do it. But what it is technically is I don't have to have a license to purchase a firearm and carry it anymore.
Right.
So you and I can mutually go down to the Academy Sports, and I bet you they probably don't have any.
Not no more.
It's going to take about another year before they get up to stock since that happened. September 1st is when it changed.
We're still waiting for the zombie apocalypse to hit.
Yeah, we're fucked by that time.
COVID about to mutate again. You never know.
Oh. You know.
They got another variant.
We have seen a movie. Wait, another one outside of Delta?
I believe there's another variant. My mother was talking to me about it.
Yeah, we have seen a zombie movie that was... Oh, no. It was... Vampires. It was The Strain. Had you seen that? Little side note. It was an FX TV show.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Vampires happened because of an infection. But what are your thoughts on the gun stuff?
So again, like I did for my 200th episode, I did questions from people. And one of the questions I was given was, you know, about like gun laws and stuff like that. I don't understand. Not that I don't understand. I think the bigger issue is why so many people feel the need to be armed and to be armed with weapons that are not designed for personal protection.
You got single shot. You got 12 gauge. Automatics. Like
we talking about weapons that are designed to kill as many human beings as possible as quickly as possible. And I think that's what we need to address. Like what is so wrong in our country that so many people feel the need to possess such a thing? Like that's weird to me. I don't want to hurt nobody like that.
Do you want to own a weapon? Would you see Jared Flanagan owning a weapon between now and the time he dies? Having any interest?
You want to know the only interest I have in owning a weapon?
He's going to be like, I want a crossbow.
Nah.
I want a crossbow and a horse.
Crossbow does sound kind of cool.
They are.
But here's the interest I have. This is the way I think. You know, right. This is how fucked up my brain is.
Flamethrower.
No, not a flamethrower. I would like maybe like a shotgun or a rifle, something I could disassemble and clean, and something large enough that I could disassemble and clean in front of a possible suitor for Elise. And make them slightly nervous. Like, that is the only reason that I want the weapon. Not to ever fire it at them, not to point it at them, just so that when they show up to pick her up or something, I can be sitting in the living room, like, cleaning my shotgun.
That's
just so they know.
That's your reason.
He's a little bit off.
For saying, you know what? Between now and the time I die, I might have a weapon in the form of a rifle or a shotgun.
Yeah.
so that I can clean it in front of the
and sewer. I don't even know if they would work in Texas, because the kid probably got more guns than I do. And he might come in there and say, hey, you need to get a bump stock, bro.
So
let me hook you up with a scope for that.
If the time came for personal defense to protect Elise or that kid that was in your house because somebody tried to break in and they had a Brandon and a knife and they were trying to cut y'all, would you shoot?
Like I said, yeah, it the only in my mind, and this is still like hypothetical to me, because I've never balled my fist up to hit someone as hard as I possibly could.
Have you been in a fight?
I've been in a couple fights. I've never hit a person. I never hit a person in the face. I've never hit a person in the face. I've never, like, I don't have a desire. I feel like the only thing that could drive me to the point where I would have a desire to inflict that kind of harm on you would be that it was my life or my daughter's life or yours. And that is the only situation. And I'm not even sure. I'm not trying to act like I'm, you know, a martyr or something like that. Like, right. I'm not sure that if it was just my life or yours, that I would be like, I feel like I'd be like,
Alex, MF, do something.
I feel like I'd be like, man, you know,
somebody's got to do something here. It ain't gonna be me.
Yeah, you know, I don't, you know, if you feel that strongly about it, then go ahead, man. Yeah, take me out. Man. If that's really what you need to do right now, because I don't,
something's got to happen. I don't want to be the one to do it.
But you know, my idea of personal protection is I stay out of situations where I would feel that unsafe.
Understood. I feel that. So I'm watching some things. Donut Operator is the channel's name. I'd spoken with you about a shooting that he had gone through the video of. And another one happened today, right? The first one I told you about was the guy with the two officers, and he had the, you know, that's what we were talking about, you know, not just having a rifle, right, single shot or you know, like a 9mm, but...
But we're getting away from personal protection right now.
No. Hold on. Okay. Hold on. So, but what I was talking about was that, you know, this guy was trying to kill these cops. So move forward. And what happens is that there's a guy that's that's just shooting. Like, he's in public shooting at people. And if I had my pistol on me, I would stop him. If I had my pistol on me that I bought before they changed the law or after they changed the law, and now I have the legal right to carry. First off, I have the legal right to carry. Second off, I have the right now to go and buy without having to go through, you know, we don't have to go through training in order to receive a permit in order to buy a gun anymore, right? So what happens is now people are able to just like buy a fucking pistol and don't know how to use it. It's pretty simple, right? Load the bullets in there the right way, hit the clip in there, take the safety off, aim and fire. But there are some other things that go along with it. So that gentleman, he was shooting, you know, and he put down 10 people in a shopping plaza, and a cop ended up getting him with an assault rifle across the highway, like chased him, ran into the middle of the highway, got him on the other side, poo-poo, tapped him twice in the shoulder, got him, knocked him down, and he was arrested. But I'm saying, like, for myself, if I had a weapon on me and I saw that happening, I would stop that. Would you?
Here's my thing. I think more people having weapons with that mindset makes for a more dangerous situation. So we have trained police officers, mm-hmm, who have killed people with cell phones in their hand because they thought it was a weapon.
Sure.
Right. And these people are trained, mm-hmm, on how to handle these situations. They've gone through extensive training. And then I got you, who just feels like if there's a shooter, I want to be able to protect myself. You haven't gone through any of that training. If you got a weapon on you, and maybe not saying you specifically, but mm-hmm, if the numbers are more people have them than don't, how do I know about
who the shooter is?
This guy over here who sees me pull my vape out of my pocket and panics. And this guy over here who, you know, but it's that's not your responsibility. That's not your job it's not your job to be armed in preparation for the possibility to save a life. And if you want to do that, then become a police officer. Go through the training. Have some idea how to handle that situation. Just don't be the vigilante dude in the crowd who's ready to pop off when something pop off.
So there are people who are trained, right?
Right.
That aren't police officers. Some of them are soldiers that are retired now. They're just vets. Some of them are people like me that have been trained, you know, on how to use the weapons. And I don't feel the same way about that as you do. I feel that even if I didn't have a weapon, if I had the opportunity to try to stop the shooter, I would. You know, by physical force.
Okay, and I'm good with that. I'm not good with everybody on martial law, everybody on vigilante justice. Not everybody's Texas, you know, Walker, Texas Ranger out here ready to do the shootout at the OK Corral. I'm not trying to be in a crowd of people that got guns.
Everybody's holding,
he's waiting, like, for waiting for something to pop off. Like, just why is everybody? That's my thing. It's like, what we need to be focused on is the fact that people are afraid that they could be in a crowd and somebody start shooting. And how is that not tied to everybody having the ability to have guns? If everybody didn't have the ability to have guns, you wouldn't be in a crowd worried about the guy who might start killing 10 people. See, or the odds would go down. I feel like the more weapons you have out there, the odds go up. I don't know what you on today. I don't know if, you know, somebody spiked your coffee. You know, and now you tripping.
Got some super juice.
Now you on LSD and you tripping balls, and everybody looks like Al Qaeda to you, and so you start popping off. Like, I don't know. Right. I think we lessen the odds of all of these mass shootings by lessening the amount of guns out there, not increasing the amount of guns. Now we just have shootouts.
I don't think the production of guns are going to increase just because they lifted this ban in one state.
No, I'm not talking about because the production of guns. Mm-hmm. Well, this, and I'm talking like not just Texas. I think Texas is taking it a step further, mm-hmm. like making it easier mm-hmm. to get guns rather than harder. I think as a country, we need to look at where does this fear come from, and how can we stem the fear rather than just continuing to arm people in preparation of this fear?
I don't know if that's anything that can be changed by any sort of legislation or any sort of government movement or any sort of shit at all out there, man. It's about preservation of life and death. And if mine's threatened, I'm going to try to stop it, whether I have a pistol or not. And whether I have a pistol or not is not going to be my determinant factor as to whether or not I will jump.
Right. But whether you have a pistol or not, maybe the determining factor
as to whether I get shot by another person that's not.
It may be the determining factor in whether or not the force that you use to protect yourself is lethal or not.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to try to kill you if you're shooting at people, whether I have a gun or not. I'm going to take a brick right to the back of your fucking head and bash it.
Well, I would rather you have a brick than bricks everywhere. I'm not trying to have no anti-brick laws. Put stacks of bricks on every corner so people can have bricks just in case. But yeah, I'm not against anti-brick laws. I'm against anti-murder weapons laws. Like, what is the purpose of other than hunting? What's the purpose of a weapon? Even if you're saying self-protection, what are you trying to do to a person if you shoot them?
You're trying to injure them and kill them
severely.
Uh huh.
Yes.
It's going one of two ways. You're shooting them to disable them, or you're shooting them to kill them.
And I think that's a sick society. If we want that ability, if everybody wants that ability,
I don't think it's a sick society. I don't know. I guess I'm personally I'm viewing this in a personal position. Like, I don't think it's a sick thing for me to want to have a pistol or or a rifle or a shotgun, whatever the case it may be, in order to want to be able to go out to the firing range and go and practice shooting for the sake of having a gun, just to be able to do it. And if in the event while I'm owning a weapon, it comes to the point where I have to use it to express lethal force to somebody, then I signed up for that when I got the gun originally.
Because you can go to a firing range right now and don't own a weapon and go shoot and go have fun.
But I can't take those back to the house. They try to arrest me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when they try to arrest me, I'm gonna have a pistol in my hand.
I have no desire to inflict that kind of harm on another human being, you know, unless I was put in that situation. And I would rather live my life in a way that I lessen the odds I'm ever in that situation rather than live my life in a way where I'm constantly prepared for that situation.
That's living in a utopian dream that doesn't exist.
You're supposed to strive for perfection.
What we do has no difference on the rest of the world out there.
Oh, yes, it
does. Because those kids that went to school in Columbine, those people that were shot in California, their fucking lives were impacted that day. Some were dead, some were injured and affected physically in ways that they couldn't recuperate from. Families lost members. And they may have been the Buddhists of the family, but nothing about the way that they chose to live their life that day impacted what ended up happening. Had there have been somebody to be able to stop it with another weapon, it could have saved more lives than losing those lives.
That's a ludicrous, you know, extension of logic in my eyes, because the same laws that allow you to have a weapon in preparation for Columbine are the same laws that allow those kids to have a weapon to commit Columbine.
So you think it's like the snail eating its, I mean, the snake eating its own tail?
Pretty much. It's like, why are we this unsafe? Why are we this unsafe? Are we this unsafe because they're not, they're, we need more guns or because we need less guns?
Do you think this is new?
No.
You don't think this is new?
But I don't think we ever, we continually, we treat this like we have a headache due to lack of aspirin. No, that's not why you have a headache. Uh-huh. Aspirin may alleviate the symptoms of the headache.
Right.
But you have not solved the reason that you have a headache.
What's the reason for the headache?
That's what we need to figure out.
In your mind.
I don't know. We have created like an ultraviolent, you know, an obsession toward, you know, this kind of stuff. We don't. Here's one thing I think will solve like 90% of the arguments we have in America. If we could ever come to a consensus on the value of human life.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could do that, if we could come to a consensus on the value of human life, I think a lot of the discussions we had, you know, would be mute. If we were talking about protecting life by at any cost, a lot of these discussions would be mute. But we're not. We protect certain lives. We protect lives in certain situations. We protect lives in, you know, whatever, for whatever reason. But we don't use the same logic across the board when it comes to the value of human life.
It's because not all lives need to be taken the same way.
That's why I beg to differ.
I just don't, man. Like, I've been in a situation where I've been shot at. I've been in a situation where people were, you know, lethally threatening my life with a pistol to the back of my head and a knife at my throat. And had that situation progressed any further, that person and those people were attempting to take my life. Right? I feel at that point, your life is valued more than that person or those people's lives. I feel that my children's lives are valued more than those people. I feel that your daughter's life is more valuable than those people. I feel like I don't need to shoot you guys or break your necks, right? For the sake of taking your life, but I feel like I need to shoot those guys or break their necks for the sake of saving my own life.
Right. But like I said before, the same capability
that
you want,
uh-huh,
to possess these instruments of
terror
or these instruments of harm or these instruments of
but it don't take a pistol to make that happen.
How did you get out of did you have a weapon in them situations that you got out of?
Oh, I did. My fist in a glass bottle in one of them, and the other one was my mouth in conversation.
So a weapon isn't necessarily necessary to escape those situations.
But that one dude that with the conversation, he ended up shooting three other dudes, man, out there at that same hotel and got locked up for it. Still locked up for it.
I don't feel like the solution to that is more weapons.
I feel like your position on this is more of like a aerial view, like on a principle, versus of a more personal level. I feel like this is good conversation. You've got some good points for like actual movement cause, you know, legislation conversation changes. But I can't grasp it. I can't grasp it personally. You know what I'm saying?
That's cool.
And there's nothing wrong with any of it, right? With what you're talking about personally for myself, with what I'm talking about either. And I don't think you're the only one that feels that way. And vice versa. I don't think I'm the only one that feels this way. I wonder what it's like though, man, to be a non-cop involved in a situation that opens up, right? And you save another person's life by taking another man's life before the cops even get there, right? I wonder what that person feels like. I've never had to physically go through that. I've had to restrain some things and stop some things, but I've never had to kill anybody.
You know, when Osama bin Laden was murdered.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think we also got to start using that word. Like we use words like assassinated and stuff like that to like separate murders from other murders. Mm-hmm. Like when a human takes the life of another human being, it's murder. Justifiable, unjustifiable is a different discussion. But at the end of the day, it's murder. And we don't like the word murder, but, it, you know, it's murder. So when Osama bin Laden was murdered, and I understand
the just cause.
I understand the feeling of a necessity for that to have happened. And I remember watching on TV when they, because they just threw his body or the coffin or whatever
over the water,
into the water,
in the ocean,
and then people celebrate. And that to me was like such a disheartening moment. I feel like that the loss of a human life, regardless of that life, should never be celebrated. I feel like if we live in a world that creates a person so evil that the only solution is to end that person's life, that in itself is something to be mourned. What is wrong?
But that you're taking that to the point like it's the world's fault that sometimes there are people that are that way.
It is, and I believe it is. I believe we create these people.
So you don't think that there are just naturally created through birth sociopaths and psychopaths and murderers that are that way because they have a predisposition mentally?
I think there are predispositions and things, and we've talked about this, where if you create spaces where
right,
we can where talk people about these where things. People can get help,
right?
Then we can help those people. But if the fact that we live in a world that a person can get to a point where there is no saving them, there's no helping them, there's no change, there's no, and the only option left is to end that life. Could we just talked before this show about how. You're only ever one decision away from changing your entire life.
Correct.
So when I think of that, I think of that to say anybody, as far as they've gone, as much as they've done, is still only one decision away from being a completely different person. We talked about it with Murder Mace. Murder Mace went from Murder Mace to Shiny Suit Mace to Pastor Mace back to Murder Mace.
Now he's back to Preacher Hallelujah Mace.
You know, and it's like, because you can do that. Because you can change like that.
You know, that's also a diagnosis too, right?
What's that? Being able to change like that?
Yeah, multiple personality disorders.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
I know it's not.
I think when
you can't reach them.
You can't reach them.
Okay, so let's say, hypothetically, we live in a world where there are no sociopaths created by nature, right? Which, okay, let's go back out to like animal colonies, man. And they have rogue fucking giraffes that are headbutting and trying to kill other giraffes. Do you think the colony made that giraffe that way?
We're talking two completely different things. We're talking about things that do not have the ability to reason, things that do not have a true.
They have the ability to reason.
There's a separation between us and animals.
So what I'm talking about is replication of behaviors, man. We're all animals.
Don't compare. No, we're not animals. We're on a different level. We're on a different level. Nature has given us all the same amount of time. And what animal society have you seen grow to where we are as human beings?
I don't know, man. I feel like there's application for what I'm trying to say and involved with this. And take that part out and let's go back to the hypothetical world where there are no narcissists, right? I mean, sociopaths, crazy folks that come up and, you know, kill babies and you know, gut cats for no reason when they're 10 years of age that go on to then murder, rape, and, you know, defile the bodies of their victims.
Yeah.
And we know of some of those that have been caught, captured.
Yeah, some of them spend lives in prison.
Right. And some of them spend their lives living on the free world and never ever get caught. Say that we live in a world where that's not happening. Then we're creating, in your mind, we're creating, in your theory or your belief, we're creating healthy open spaces where if I'm agitated about something, I have the room to talk about it, regardless of how grave and severe it may be, right? He gave me a head nod. So then the question that I have is there ever going to be a point in that hypothetical world where what somebody wants to do or somebody's ill intent thoughts are punishable by death? Right? Like, is there ever going to be a point where, oh, that
that is the one thing that we can't accept. We're going to have to kill you.
I'm not cool with that. I'm not cool with that. I you know, I think there are situations, you know, like there's that police officer who took down the guy who's killing 11 people. Mm-hmm. He's justified. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a justifiable move. He did what he had to do. Mm-hmm. In the attempt to preserve life. But that's his station. That's his station in life. That is the cause that he took up. That is the job function that he took. I don't think making every individual citizen that person is a good idea. Because just the same way we have good cops and bad cops, we have good people and bad people.
Right, right, right.
So if you keep extending the amount of people with that responsibility, you just extending the odds of more bad cops that ain't even cops out there patrolling the streets.
I think that's weird because from what I'm hearing, I'm grabbing the idea that you're saying that it's like that's his station that he took because that's his job that he took. So the teacher who did it didn't have the right to do it because he was a fucking teacher of ballet, for example.
I'm not saying he doesn't have the right to do it. I'm saying that I think the odds are in our favor if we're not making every Tom, Dick, and Harry
able to access,
have that responsibility to, because again, police officers who are trained, whose job it is to preserve life, you know, make mistakes when it comes to lethal force.
For sure.
So the teacher who's been trained to teach children and pass on information, I don't have any faith that person would not make a mistake when it comes to lethal force. And so I don't want to put that in their hands. I don't want to give them the opportunity to make that mistake. People who have the training make the mistake every day. And now we're talking about increasing the number of people with that ability. So you open it up for more psychopaths. You open it up for more people to make mistakes, and you open it up for people to possibly do some good.
I don't think there's any more or less in either direction. I don't think we're giving so much more leverage to the crazies than we are to the sanes.
I think
there's already a world happening out there that people aren't that people are going through, you know, that are fucked up and people that are great and none of it goes noticed. It's not in the fucking news.
No. I think that the potential harm of arming the crazies outweighs the potential good of arming the sane.
I don't agree.
That's where we disagree.
I feel that.
And I think the sane, uh-huh, with good intentions can also do bad, also do harm.
Sure.
So now we got the crazies who intend to do harm, the sane that don't intend to do harm, but will do harm, and then the few that are going to beat those odds.
But we're counting those numbers how? When we say
it's all hypothetical. And I, to me,
we should do a case study on this. To me, shit, I don't, dog.
the reason why alcohol was my drug of choice, right? Mm-hmm. That don't mean I'm gonna smoke weed, because there's a chance I smoke weed and I don't go back to doing everything I did. And there's a chance that I smoke weed and I go back to doing everything I did, and the potential for the harm outweighs the risk to me.
That's funny you said that. I was having a conversation with myself and another person inside my head. The other person wasn't around, and it was about using substances and, you know, marijuana. Like, my thought is like, I don't want you to smoke pot, right? And their potential response could be, but I want to, you know. Why do you want to? Because I can. Because I haven't expressed a problem with drugs like you have, you know.
Yeah.
So your reasoning is because you can. That's as sound of a reason as me just still saying, I can smoke crack because I can. It just doesn't make sense. Just because you can do something doesn't mean it's a good idea. And I guess we, you know, like, we could draw that back to the pistol things, you know, the weapon things too. But I got sidetracked with that. You took me back to the back patio when I was sitting down two nights ago. But I was tired as fuck, beat up after them days. Just talking to people that weren't even here, going through fucking conversations.
All right, so that's
what do we got?
I felt like I knew we were going to go there with that one. I think it's a good conversation.
Yeah,
I definitely agree that there's some idealism in there. Like, I live in an idealistic place, but I have.
You got some real liberal tactics, bro.
I don't know.
I'm just joking.
I'm very conservative. We'll get to some shit on where I'm conservative in a minute.
It's coming up. Yeah, right.
But yeah, like, no, I have that. I understand utopia and a perfect world is unattainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're supposed to strive for it.
I think that utopia and the ideal perfect world is attainable, and it's all in way.
Perfection by definition is unattainable.
It's in the way that we maintain our thoughts, man. Because even in the fucked up shit that happens, right? We can be bleak and pessimistic and nasty to the point of like committing suicide, or we can start to have things roll like feathers. I don't know, man. I don't know. I've had to come through a military
family. And that sounds idealistic to me.
That sounds idealistic?
That it's all in the way we see it, man.
I mean, that's a Buddhist mindful approach to things. That's a Tibetan practice that they
But they want to change things. They don't just live in I'm good, so that's good. They live in I should try to extend my God. I should do good. I should be good. I should have a good impact
while understanding
on the rest of the world.
That people die, while understanding that people shoot other people and they die, while understanding that the opium that's made on their fields goes out and gets sold for heroin across the country and across the globe, while understanding that the world is a fucking shitty place sometimes, they're still...
And you still try
still
to change
carry
it.
Their mind.
You still try to change it, though. You don't just say the world is shitty and that's okay as long as I can look at it, as long as I can see the good. You try to change it to make it less shitty than it was when you woke up tomorrow.
I mean, wouldn't those two things go hand in hand?
That's what I'm saying. It extends beyond just your thoughts. It extends into trying to change.
Well, your thoughts are how you live, aren't they?
And how you live. So if I just was concerned with my good, and I'm good, and the world is... people die, but, you know, I feel good about it, and I'm, you know, whatever, whatever. The way I live, I raise my daughter a certain way, you know? So that is an impact on the world. The way I treat you, the way I treat people I meet on the street is an impact on the world. It doesn't stay internal. It has to have an external impact.
That I'm saying that it's just like an internal thing because it's the way you live?
I feel like you're saying it's the way I live, but I shouldn't be concerned about the world. I should just accept the world for what it is and live the way I live. I don't think we're supposed to just accept it. I think we are supposed to try to change it. We are supposed to try to make it better. We are supposed to, if we're just talking from a naturalistic standpoint,
right.
If you want to talk about animals on the planet, most animals on the planet exist with the purpose of the proliferation of their species. And they do things to ensure the next generation will live, will have, will do, you know, you have mayflies and stuff that, you know, what, they only exist above ground for a day to fuck and lay as many eggs as possible so that there can be more mayflies in the future.
So, but here's where we're going back to where you're saying that's not relevant to what we're talking about, because they have nothing that we have in terms of what comes after being an animal.
Right. So I'm saying if they on that basic level have that idea, then I'm extending that idea to saying that my life, in my opinion, should be about creating a better world for the generation that comes behind.
Okay, so my question that I had to ask you, which was, you said, I feel like that's what we're supposed to do. That's what we should do, right? This is what we need to do. My question to you is, who said that? Who created that in your mind?
To me, that was the point of me bringing up like animals and, right, and the mayfly.
Natural,
instinctively. Okay. Instinctive. Okay. Self-preservation, not just of self, but of the species.
Because there are people out there that don't feel the same, like, I have to do this in order to make this a better place, but live a good life and in turn cause no harm to people, right? Maybe they're just from different thought planes, man. But what do we got next on the Texas government?
I'm just gonna point this one thing out that you come said on at the end, but cause no harm to people. That's the most important part about that, but cause no harm to people. And what we're talking about is the potential to cause harm.
I think I can still carry a pistol and still make the world a better place.
I don't think more pistols makes the world a better place. All right.
Women's abortions.
All right, so what was the other law? The other law was the...
Women's abortions.
Women's abortions.
Texas has made it official that after 6 weeks.
Yeah, so it's my understanding that the way the law is structured is that it is not necessarily the woman that can be prosecuted or prosecuted.
Oh, no, fuck now. If I give her a ride, they can sue me.
Right. They get the people who enable or perform.
Right. And I've read some things about some doctors. I don't remember enough about it. My week has been so flustered with other shit happening.
Now, before we get into this, and I'm not going to stop you from saying anything as you want to say, but I want to frame the discussion this way. We're two men, right? And I don't feel like I don't want to have a stance one way or another about whether it should happen or shouldn't happen or should be allowed or shouldn't be allowed or who should be prosecuted. I don't feel like I have a relevant voice in that conversation. So I'm trying to make sure I'm clear on what I'm trying to say. But there is a conversation I feel like has been missing from this whole discussion that people don't talk about that I would like to introduce into the discussion. There's a conversation I would like to be had that is, I don't know, related, but not necessarily directly addressing this particular law. But go ahead. You about to do something.
Yeah, I was just gonna, the new law is called SB8. It bans abortion at around 6 weeks of pregnancy. You know, which more often than not is a long time before anybody knows that they are pregnant. Sorry, this is just settling heavy on me like this. Unexpectedly just trudged up some feelings with all that shit. SB8 allows people across the country to sue anyone who helps someone get an abortion after 6 weeks in Texas, including doctors, partners, friends, family members, husbands, or an abortion fund volunteer. SB8 offers a $10,000 minimum reward for every successful lawsuit. SB8 is the harshest, most extreme abortion restriction in the country, and it's the first six-week ban that has been allowed to take effect ever. And they've posted something here. This is by Planned Parenthood. They said, if you're in Texas and you need an abortion, please seek care as soon as possible, right? And they put a phone number, their phone number, which I feel like if I say that right now, somebody that doesn't even know me, some part of Texas, could call up and be like, he helped her to get an abortion by providing that phone number.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. How far does that extend? Would I go?
Play it safe. The website is available to everybody.
Yeah. Just go to PlannedParenthood.org. Look it up.
Was that the stance you were about to take?
The stance that I was going to take was one that was going to get me sent to jail.
Okay.
It was, I am.
You want to aid and abet?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. Your part, what you were saying, how you were bringing this up, right?
Yeah.
Wait till you hear that in the playback. My voice is like. your part is part of what I was about to say. Taking away a motherfucker's choice. Right? And that's where I was gonna jump in and be like, that's fucked up, right? But then let's flip that, spin that, and talk about our choice. Taking away a man's choice, right? It's in part where your position was, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know that. I think I don't have a stance one way or the other. I don't. This is another one of those things that I don't know what the solution is, but I feel like there's a missing piece, you know, to the conversation a little bit. So, I played that song to start the episode.
Yeah.
That song is called "Retrospect for Life" by Common, and man, it was several years that I could not listen to that song. What I want to say, like, is one of the like. I don't know that any other male artist has done it that I'm aware of, but like just make some art about abortions and pregnancy and how it affects the men involved. And again, I'm not trying to hijack this issue. I don't want to hijack this issue and make this a men's rights issue. I just want to like open the space to have this conversation for people who may have feelings that they feel like they can't discuss. Because I feel like when it comes to abortion, like men are supposed to stay silent. They're not supposed to say anything. They're not supposed to have a, you know.
If you have an opinion, like, let's not do this, baby, then I think, like, the general consensus across the board is you're an asshole. Am I wrong?
I feel like that's, you know.
Isn't that kind of like the floating feeling that comes along with being the guy that's like, fuck that. Fuck this. We ain't doing it. Fuck that baby. Fuck that pregnancy.
I think if you say fuck that baby, I think that's
yeah.
Yeah, you've crossed some lines somewhere.
But here's the thing. If you say, baby, I don't think we should have this baby, I think the tone that comes across is exactly what I just got done saying.
But I think,
and this isn't my personal situation either. Like, I'm not holding that, but I'm saying that I think that for a man to have I don't think this is a good idea feeling about the pregnancy and to speak up about it, like, he's gonna get shit on pretty quick and chastised as being like,
I think it's a lose lose in that situation. Like,
come at me.
Sorry, so personal experience, yeah. Right? So and let me say, in the song, in Common Song, you know, he makes it. In the lyrics, it makes it sound like it was a mutual decision. You know, he says something, she and I agree to see we don't need, you would have been much more than a mouth to feed. But, you know, I wasn't prepared mentally or financially. These are lines that he spit in the song. He also has a line that hit me really hard, dog, like really hard. He says, I don't want to go through the drama of having a baby's mama. Weekend visits and buying jeans ain't going to make me a father.
God bless.
And dude, if that ain't my situation right now, weekend visits and buying jeans, it's like, shit.
And then arguing about the type of jeans.
Yeah, arguing about the type of jeans. Why they make low-rise jeans for six-year-olds. Anyway.
Oh, man. That's some other shit. That's another conversation, bro.
But all right, personal experience, right? So this is me bearing my soul, being naked in front of everybody. Because we family, I can do that. I believe I've lost count. In terms of the number of abortions I've been a party to, I definitely feel like it's double digits, but I couldn't even tell you, like, clearly, like, the number, right? And in all of those situations, I think I played it, and I feel very guilty about this, and I talk about it in the book. I played every one of those situations, as if I was absolving myself from the decision-making process, partly in that kind of, like, you don't want to be the guy who's like, we can't do this, we shouldn't do this, you know?
Right.
Like, it feels like the only appropriate response for a man, if a woman tells you that she's pregnant, is to be excited and happy. Like, that's what you're supposed to, if you don't.
Which goes along the lines of what I'm saying. If you say, like, I don't think this is a good idea. You're going to be saying, that's going to send flags that say, fuck this baby. Fuck you. Right? Like, that's what it's going to sound like.
Like,
to her man friends and her girlfriends and to her mom and to her dad and to the people on social media that they read about it.
And to the people at the clinic. Everybody.
Right.
But
he's an asshole, sweetheart.
Man, I shouldn't be laughing about baby. It. I'm going to try to bring some levity to it. Funny story is when my ex-wife was telling me that she was pregnant with Elise.
Right.
We had just come from doing a workout. We was working out at this place, Orange Theory, where you put on the heart monitors and stuff. And so it was
tracks and shows you on the TV.
Yeah, serious workout. Super tired, sweaty. And it was April Fool's Day. And we come in the house and, she lays it on me. And I remember, like, just looking at her and being like, I need to take a shower. And I
went. Damn, bro. Let me ask you, were you just tuckered from the gym? And you were like, all right, we're pregnant. Cool, baby. I got to take a shower.
Yeah, the reality of what she said hadn't hit me. And so, you know.
What'd she say after that? He's like, I got to take a shower.
She didn't say nothing. Like, I went and I got in the shower. And, like, in the shower, I do my best thinking in the shower. I do some incredible thinking. I write crazy bars in the shower. Like, I do great work in the shower. And while I was in the shower getting clean, it dawned on me, like, shit, that was not the way you were supposed to have handled that, bro. Like,
he sees probably, things clearly when he's in there, apparently.
She might be outside going through some things because you didn't handle that appropriately. So I got out of the shower and I made sure I tried to clarify my stance on how I felt about that. But the crazy thing about that is that in that situation, the decision had already been made for us because we had a pregnancy previous that we terminated, and I think, you know, in my attempt to make her feel better about the decision that I kind of just laid squarely on her shoulders, was that if we do this, you know, if it ever happens again, we don't, there's no discussion to be had with keeping it, right? You know, and that was, man, it was kind of like that ass backward, like that asshole-ish way of like putting the pressure on her, like, it's okay, like, you know, this is kind of what I want you to do, and to give you an incentive to do it, I'll let you know that if it ever happens again, like, you know, in my mind, this was very early in our relationship, in my mind, we might not even be together like a year from now.
This is the saving grace to get me out of this situation.
But if it ever happens again, like, yeah, if that's what you want to do, cool. If it ever happens again, like,
we're gonna see it through.
We're gonna see it. We're gonna have that baby. And so yeah, that's where. But yeah, I, in all of those situations, I left the decision to them. You know, I made sure they understood I was financially ready to handle. I shouldn't be laughing. I was financially ready.
Yeah, you should, because a lot of people can't talk that, and that's something that they want
to
know.
I was financially ready to handle, you know, that decision if they wanted to go that way. I wasn't so sure if I was financially ready to handle if they wanted to go the other way. Like, I got $350, right? You know,
I got $350 right now.
Right now,
which way you want to go?
You know, I don't know if I got. You know,
I can take this and roll it into an investment C&D tomorrow, or.
And in that vein, like in that number,
fucked up for laughing about this conversation.
We are very fucked up.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not. We're allowed to talk about this.
We are allowed to be fucked up, though. We can just say we fucked up. Like, don't hide from it. Well, we fucked up. But in the same vein, like I've had somebody run the game on me, create a false situation,
turn around,
create a false situation to get the $350. I've had that.
They got the money out your pocket.
They
on
got
that?
The money out my pocket, and they felt so guilty that they gave it back. But they got it though. They got.
Were they
it.
Using drugs?
Nah, but this person, I was probably already on like 4 or 5. I was probably on like abortion 4 or 5. Like,
so they knew what it was. They knew how to play it.
They knew how to play it. So I mean, I don't know if any. Well, no, nah, I went with them. I went, and I've gone to the clinic with every one, and that's not a fun outing for a general. I'm not to say that it's fun for the women. Like, I don't. I feel like when you say stuff, like if I say I'm hungry, it's like I'm not acknowledging your hunger. Like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not. All I'm saying is what it was like for me. I'm in no way like putting any equivalence to what I went through to what they went through. I'm just saying it's not a fun situation.
I missed one of those experiences. It was a pretty tough situation. Yeah.
I used to have nightmares, though. I used to have nightmares about, like, you know, a little girl, you know, being upset with me, or, you know, I literally used to have nightmares. When I was detoxing one time, I remember being in my apartment, and there's a little girl running around my apartment. And, you know, I kept, like, running out of my room to try to, like, find her and, you know, what the hell is going on? Where this little girl come from? Like, I would have hallucinations about like children, you know, in my apartment. Like, what I'm trying to say is that like men don't have a voice in this discussion, but we absolutely are impacted by it.
You see my face?
I see your face.
You see how I changed just a minute ago? Bro, I was with somebody. We got pregnant. It hadn't happened in 2 years, and on that third year, we got pregnant. Don't know how it happened. Everybody swore,
we can't get pregnant.
I was clean and sober, not doing no drugs. Actually, this was after I lapsed. This is after I relapsed, and I got cleaned up. So I was about a year mark, and we got pregnant. But this is the person I was with, you know, 3 years before we got there, two and a half years. I paid like $890 for that abortion. To add to whatever 300 she had or something, you know? And we went through with it. And then, at some point, I think it was before I relapsed again after that, which was shortly after that, you know, I was told, I couldn't have that baby because you're a drug addict. Because if you're a drug addict, our kid's going to be a drug addict. Not because I think so much that that's going to happen, but because my parents do. And because my grandma and my grandpa do. So because of them, I don't want to have this baby.
because of you. And that really fucked with me. I never had that happen ever before. That was heavy.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the part that gets to me sometimes is that, like, we're talking about this in terms of, like, whether or not we have a say in the conversation. But in the literal, like, real life circumstance, you have no say. You have no say. If you, we're talking about, so like, I think I was telling you the story about when my ex-wife got pregnant and we were married. Like, this was my wife. This was my wife. I wasn't just some dude that knocked up some chick. Like, this was my wife, a person I'm legally, you know,
bound to
that I've said that vows.
They make you pay alimony for up to 7 years if you guys divorce.
Yeah, I signed, well, not in Texas.
Oh wait, that's right. Texas don't do that.
There you go, more Texas laws. But yeah, when she got pregnant, like, I had no say in how any of that stuff went in terms of, you know, the care of my unborn child. The only voice I got in those decisions is the voice she gave me. Like, if there was a decision to be made and she wanted my opinion and respected my opinion, then that's the amount of say I got. But right. Legally,
right,
you know, even with that being my wife and that being my child,
right,
I had no say, zero say. If she wanted to abort that child, even as my wife, and don't quote me on this because I don't know what the laws are everywhere, but I don't think there would have been anything I could have done to stop her.
I could just be oblivious and dumb and ignorant to the reality as well, but I don't think, I too don't think that there was anything that could have happened. I don't think that I had any sort of hand in this situation with this individual either, right? We weren't married. It was my seed. We'd been together for 3 years. Family could attest to it. We're talking about, you know, getting married, yada, yada. But I don't think that we have any right.
Yeah. And it's not my body, and I can't say that I should have a right, but I'm just saying it to say these situations absolutely have an impact on the men involved.
So here's something that I'm growing to understand more and more. The type of action a person expresses sides them to a political party. Right? Like, if you say, I'm pro-life, that puts you into a certain color. If you say, I'm pro-choice, that puts you into a certain color. Right?
Yeah.
And what the fuck? Like, why has it got to be political? Why can't it be to the value, going back, right, to the value of human life? Why can't we talk about that?
That's a social construct. We've made it that way. We've made it that you got to be on this side or that side. You could, I say this all the time, and I'm not very political, but, you know, I play fantasy football, and I would like to say I play fantasy politics. I go with the player on the team that I think is going to do the best, regardless of what team they play for, you know, and you can have that stance. You don't have to be, but so many times there's so much to be aware of. There's so much to keep track of that it's kind of like, fuck it. If all I got to keep track of is who's Democrat and who's Republican, I can just vote down the line this way and vote down the line that way. That's way easier than paying attention and getting involved and listening, because it's a lot of shit. And it's a lot of it is just bullshit. And
sure,
they pass these bills about nothing, with one clause at the end,
right,
that has something to do with something that might affect you. And yeah, you know, it's work, especially in a society now where, like, you know, you say you're burning the candle on both ends. You got so much to do.
You ain't even got time to sit down and read shit.
And I need to sit down and understand what's going on.
You trying to tell
me
I got to spend 2 minutes reading what Biden's doing with this new fucking, like, I want to see all your money type shit? God, I wish I had a plug in my head that I could just plug it in and, like, download the information.
I just want to root for the Washington football team every week. I'm not trying to understand all.
I wasn't even there for the whole debate about them losing the Redskins name.
Hey, I don't want to see the playbook. I just want to root for the team.
That's it.
You know, but yeah, man. Like, I feel like there's no
tomorrow.
There's no space for that conversation. And we were talking about it the other night. And like the more I think back on that, like when my ex-wife getting pregnant. And I was there for most of the OBGYN visits and stuff like that. Like, I actually stopped going because of the way I was treated. Like, I would be there, and they, like, the doctors would have their back to me. They wouldn't even talk to me. Like, I really was not, like, they made it clear to me that you're not needed here. you're not, it almost felt like you're not wanted here, you know. I think I told you about like going to pay, like leaving a visit and going to make, you know, because we have to make deposits
for the birth, for the delivery,
and like going to pay, you know, our deposit after one of the visits, and you know, my ex-wife asking the receptionist a question or the nurse or whoever a question, and it having something to do with me, and the nurse, while I'm standing there, saying to her, "Tell him blah 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 blah," as if they couldn't talk to me, and I would complain to like my ex-wife about it, and it always made me feel, I always seemed to come across as like I'm trying to make this about me. Like, she's the one that's pregnant. She's carrying this baby. She's going through this stuff. The doctors are doing these things to her, and I get that. But this is my child too, and like this is miserable. Like, to just go places and have people act like you don't exist, and like not be included in conversations, and not be, you know, it was, and there was no place I could go to talk about these things without coming across, like you said. Like saying,
fuck this baby.
Like I'm saying, fuck this baby. Yeah. What about me? You know, like, right. You know, but it's like, but I am going through something. Like, I am going through something. I'm dealing with this pregnant woman. I remember at one point we was trying to make, like, going to Arlington for the Cowboy games.
Right.
Every year, tradition.
The annual thing.
And she was pregnant during one of our trips to Arlington to see the football game. And we driving there, and like we on the road, we're going from Austin to Arlington. So
right.
You know this trip. And at a certain point she wanted orange juice.
Yeah.
And where we were, there was no place. Like, there was, it's not that we weren't stopping because we was
just
like,
can't get no orange juice.
It just was nowhere to stop.
Right.
And like, and it was becoming like, it really was becoming like, if we don't get orange juice right now, everybody in this car going to die. Like,
That was your ex-wife?
That was my ex-wife. Like, it was that serious. And so, yeah, I completely understand that something serious is going on with an individual if they take that stance. But then also understand that the people in that car were impacted.
Absolutely.
About what was going on.
Absolutely.
With that individual. And if we play the whole trauma Olympics, like, your pain is more important than my pain, that's when shit goes left. But yeah, man, like being in the delivery room, I was telling you this, like being in there, and she was in labor for 23 hours, you know, and I made the decision, like, if she can't eat, I'm not going to eat, you know, I was there. Like, I never left the delivery room, you know, for the entire 23 hours. I was there with her, and middle of the night, I don't know what time it is, and you know, and she's sobbing, like, you know, I can't do this, I'm so sorry. And I gotta sit there and be like, it's gonna be okay, you can do this, I know you can do this, don't worry, it's gonna be okay. And I don't know if it's all gonna be okay. I'm panicking, I'm losing my shit. Like, this is my wife and my daughter hanging in the balance, the two most important people in the world to
me. Right.
You know, I'm absolutely going through something right now, and I can't express it in any way, shape, form, or fashion. When my daughter was finally delivered, and I got a moment, like, my wife was asleep, and they had, you know, had taken Elise, you know, to do whatever they were doing. I walked out. I found an empty hallway in the hospital and just, like, screamed at the top of my lungs because it was just so much built up that I couldn't release for that entire time. And in no way am I saying that I went through something worse than what she went through for those 23 hours. But I absolutely went through something.
Right.
And I had nowhere to go to, like, talk about that or to express that this was difficult for me. And people used to ask us if we were having another kid. I'd be like, man, I don't know about her. I'm not ready to do that again.
Some things that take place, it's the other party's experience just doesn't matter. Right? Like, it just doesn't matter. Nobody's like, how were you through that? How'd that go for you? I know it was stressful and traumatizing while X, Y, and Z was happening. Or, you know, extremely fucking exhilarating and you know, exciting. But there are some things that happen. Like, in a wedding day, both people count.
No, they don't. I think. Do they post? They should, but they don't. Nobody gave a fuck about me on our wedding day.
What?
Okay, funny story.
Let's hear it.
Right? So we came there separately, of course, because we were doing the whole I'm not supposed to see. Yeah, so she came there with her people. I came there with my people. And one of her friends, as a wedding gift to us, had gifted us a room at a hotel nearby, and that's where we were going to go. We had guests and stuff at the house, but, you know, we were going to go stay in a hotel room for our wedding night, you know, and be by ourselves. So we're leaving the ceremony, right? Her people grab her. I don't even... All I know is that there's a hotel room for us. I don't know where. Nobody's talked to me because this is coming from her people, right? We're leaving. We just got married.
Yeah.
We just said, I do, kissed, put the rings on, all that good stuff. Now we are one in this moment.
Yeah.
We're leaving the thing. Her people grab her to take her to the hotel room, and one of them turns and looks at me and says, who's taking you? And I'm like, why would we be separate at this point? Like,
yeah, we already did that.
Well, yeah, like, why? How am I somehow not included in us, in the married couple going
to their married couple room? Yeah.
Like,
what happened?
It's like, go fend for yourself.
What the fuck happened?
Man,
I want to know what the resolution was.
I think I gave him a look. I gave him a look.
You gave him a browse?
Because I'm not, you know, I'm not an imposing dude, and I very rarely complain, and I very rarely, like, talk about how I think something is fucked up. But I think in that moment...
What did that face look like? Give me an idea. Show me. Now, I think you had to do something a little bit meaner than that.
Like, nah, it was just like a... Are you trying to? Like, do you... Like, do you want me to... Like, is this...
Was there like a...
Is this the moment where I'm supposed to, like, spaz out on you? Like, is, do you want to see that?
Motherfucker.
I'm sure she's talked to you.
Nigga!
Like... It's like, I'm sure when she's complained about me and stuff, she's talked to you about, like, my Hulk out periods and the times where I go to another place. Are you trying to see that right now? That was that, like,
are we going there?
My Tammy could tell you, like, when my voice get high.
Yeah.
It's not good. Like, when I saw, nigga, are you trying to, like, nigga, do you want a problem right now?
So did you guys make it there together?
We made it there together.
Anybody else there?
Nah, it was nobody else.
Okay, let y'all roll.
Yeah.
Did you guys see each other the night before?
Yeah. We saw each other. We split that morning. We went, we had breakfast time. Crazy story about that. Again, to show you, it's not, and maybe this is my life just being traumatic, and maybe this is my chance to vent and talk about all the shit as
a
man.
Let's get it.
I don't never get to talk about, I don't never get to act like I'm hurt ever. We have breakfast the morning of the wedding. And I think at that point, it's me, my mother, her mother, of course, my ex-wife, I think like two of her friends. And then I had a friend that came in from out of town, but was a woman. And so it's like me and like six women.
All women.
At this breakfast table. And I don't know how it got on it, but it's somehow like the air in the room was, you're lucky to be getting her. And like, people just had all these glowing things to say about my ex-wife, and a lot of negative things to say about me. He's messy. He's this. I don't know how you put up with this. I don't know about it. Like, it was just, and it was, and they were laughing and joking. Like, to them, it was very.
I think that was women being women. Had you have been absent, it'd have been okay.
Yeah, and it was very funny to them. Like, I don't think they thought they were doing anything inappropriate or mean. And eventually, like it's getting to me so much that I stop, because my mother is at this table.
That's the one that I thought was being like, he's so messy, I can't believe you put up with him.
My mother is at this table.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some point, I was like, hey, yo, can somebody say, like, I literally like, hey, yo, hey, yo, can somebody think of anything nice to say about me? And my mom was like, he makes good rice. That was the nicest thing somebody could say about on my fucking wedding day. So no, it's not about both people.
Did you guys have bachelors and bachelorette parties?
I had a sober back. I was trying to be sober back then. That was my year white knuckling it.
Oh, no shit. That was before the hotel or after the hotel?
That's before the hotel, before the suicide. So I did like a year and a half white knuckling it. No program, no nothing.
So how'd the sober party go?
I mean, it was cool. It was dudes there. We went to like a sports bar or something and like watched football, and I drank Red Bull and shit like that. Like, it wasn't. And then I think my homeboy came into town, and we went to the cigar bar, and I had some cigars.
They got a cigar bar out here?
Yeah. I had some cigars, but no
whiskey.
No whiskey. No, I got a picture of that. Me and my homeboy sitting, having a cigar. But that was it. But no, it was absolutely not about me. Not at all. That was not about me. The, You know, I don't know. I don't. So that's what I'm saying in this whole conversation is that I get that it's a woman's body, woman's choice, all this other stuff. But we talk about it as if it has zero impact on the men involved, other than because as if, like you said, the mindset of all men is I don't really want the baby, but if I get forced to do it, I do it. But
there it is,
we,
yeah.
You know, but if you ain't gonna force me to do it, you know, let me open up the checkbook and we can go ahead and knock this thing out. They don't ever talk about it as if it's traumatic or it hurts or it affects men in any way whatsoever. And I thought that Common song was one of the few songs I've heard where a man is like going through the grieving process of losing a child, even when he participated in the decision, but it's still a grieving process of losing a child because of abortion.
I don't know why, but it's not abortion, but this makes me think of Lauryn Hill, Zion.
And she sings on a song with Common.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know. I remember.
But we love our kids too. We love, dads love their kids.
Fuck yeah.
That even their unborn kids.
We love those babies in utero.
In utero.
We like them little embryos.
We talk to the bellies.
We trying to figure out names already, hoping what they're going to be like, yeah, what we going to do for them.
We talk to the bellies.
What's their nicknames going to be? I got one already. Romans was little dude.
Yeah.
Talk to him. Little dude. You in there, little dude.
Hey, I've been calling my daughter Sweet Pea since the moment she came out. And it was just instinctual. Yeah, you know, it wasn't anything I had planned. Just I saw her, and it was Sweet Pea, and I was, you know, we love our kids too, and we want to be a part of the discussion. I don't want to mandate for anybody what they have to do, you know, in terms of their body. I don't
besides
know.
Besides kissing my ass.
I don't know what the solution is for the abortion argument, but
where do you come
I think that? There's a piece of the conversation missing.
I don't disagree with you. I think that I know for a fact that it's just not something that's communicated about. It doesn't happen. And it does, actually. It does. Like, we get drunk and we talk shit about it. You know what I mean? We get fucked up and we vent about it. But
yeah.
Without the influencers, there's no, like, survivors groups or remorse parties. Because
we can't complain about it. And it's almost like, Here's where I get into trouble. Here's where I'm gonna fuck it up. Mm. It's almost like listening to a white person talk about racism. Like, oh, shut the fuck up. You don't know nothing. What are you complaining about, you know? But like, it's like listening to a man talk about like the impact of an abortion on his life. You didn't have to go through nothing. Why are you complaining? But the shit, it fucks with you. 100% fucks with you.
Both of those. For the white person and the dad.
Fucked it now.
Right? Because okay. I was going
to
ask you.
I'm going to give it to you.
Ask you about that when we first brought this conversation up sometime early last week. Like, do white people get to have that same conversation about racism, right? And, you know, like,
I'm it open
sucks
to it.
For us.
I'm open to it. Like, come sit down, talk to me, have a conversation. I want to create them open spaces
fact,
for all conversations.
A football player that went to UT, that went in Pro Bowl, had a conversation with Matthew McConaughey, who also went to UT. And it was about...
Was he rolling boogers while he was having a conversation?
The football player, Matthew McConaughey. Was that a slide at me? Did you see me rolling my boogers today or something? Camera was on, wasn't it?
Now you never seen the Jim Carrey joint when he was making fun of him?
No. Jim Carrey was making fun of Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, it was
boogers?
Like on Saturday Night Live or something.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, I want to look it up now.
I was driving a Cadillac way before it was popular or whatever.
Lincoln. Yeah.
Lincoln. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. But he was talking to the kid, you know, the football player, pro bowler. He's a black dude. Matthew McConaughey's a white guy. And they were talking about racism. Like, what's my part in all this? And what have I done? You know, what do I not know about as a white man? He asks. And the gentleman responds. And vice versa. They go back and forth about it. And I'm not going to lie. I kind of feel like Matt was, like, playing a part. I feel like he was playing a role. I feel like he was kind of like overdoing it. But I think that it's real, though. I think that it's real. I think that racism is a twofold situation, right? One towards the other and the other towards the other.
Yeah.
But both parties experience like systemic problems because of it. Even if you aren't the racist on either side, your party has to deal with things that are happening from those racists on other sides, on your sides. You get
right.
What I'm saying?
Yeah. But if we don't talk about it,
yeah,
or either in either direction, nothing gets better. And I had this argument when I think it was last year or the year before last, when Antonio Brown, called one of his coaches a cracker at practice. And then I think he got dismissed from that team, and it ended up signing with like the Patriots or something like that. And I was like, man, like, as black people, we need to be outraged, because if we act like this isn't a problem, Antonio Brown calling his coach a cracker, a racial slur, at work.
Yeah.
Because you're at work.
Yeah.
At practice. If we act like that's cool and it's nothing, and that, you know, nobody should be upset about this, then how do we have a leg to stand on, you know, when the opposite happens? How can we be upset when we get called a nigger somewhere, you know, if it was cool when our Antonio Brown called his coach his superior, you know, not superior racially, but his superior
in the workforce. He's a different level on the letter.
Right. And when he calls one of his superiors a cracker in public, everybody can see it. Everybody know it. It's in the news.
But were they homeboys and it was just overheard?
I don't give a fuck. I can't say that. I can't, like, be talking to one of my homeboys at work and be like, crack. I can't even be calling another dude a nigga in public at work. Like, if it's another black dude, I can't be like, what's up, nigga? Like, not in the workplace. You can't do that.
Man, I see it done all the time.
Hey, HR probably be around the corner just ready
HR
to do something.
HR fucking him up, bro. That's why we don't got no HR where I work right now. Which is
that's why you see it happening all the time.
Yeah, part of the reason some of the things are going down the way it is. What do we at?
Oh, we getting close. We're going to wrap it up. Man, I don't know what else I got. On the subject of football players, I saw a thing the other day from Darren. Have I talked to you about Darren Waller?
No.
Darren Waller, tight end for the Ravens. He's on two of my fantasy squads. Uh-huh. One of the elite tight ends in the league. He did an interview recently with Steve Smith where he talked. He's in recovery. And and he talks about, like, I think, like, they asked him what his rock bottom was, and this was crazy to me, is that he had gotten suspended from the league for substance abuse. And he was, you know, like he said, this was in Baltimore because he was playing for the Ravens at the time. And he was only like a couple miles, like not far from the stadium while they were playing a preseason game.
Right.
And he had gone to his guy to get what he normally get and didn't know it was laced with fentanyl, and like had passed out in his car, like just a couple, you know, not far from the stadium while his team was playing the game. He was passed out in a car, you know, almost died, you know, off of fentanyl. And that was like the thing that turned him around. And now he's one of the best tight ends in the league. But
was he using heroin?
He said he was doing, like, he was one, I'm on everything. He said he did.
If you got it, let me get
painkillers, cigarettes, weed, Hennessy, vodka.
I'm on everything. That's the kind of guy I was too, but I have my preferences. But I
was, he said, the funny thing is, he was like, I never got the meth though. Is that the finish line? Like, if you get the meth,
is that where we stop?
Is that when you get the meth, you're like, all right,
I'm done.
I'm
done. Drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad.
Drugs are good too, though. There's some things that happen with drugs.
All right, we're gonna talk about that on the next one.
Let's try that out.
All right.
I'm out.
You got anything you want to share with the folks?
Anybody listening, keep doing great. Eat some Chinese food, because I'm hankering for some Chinese food. Don't say it.
I ain't going to say nothing about your racism.
He said it. I love some motherfucking Asian food. Be it Thai.
You're going to be hungry. You're going to be hungry 30 minutes later anyway.
You better shut it, bro. It's because I got that MSG up in there. Nah, man, I'm good.
Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, Madison Square Garden. You're so retarded. How they make Madison Square Garden so small?
Don't you know you can't say retarded, bro?
I did not know that. That's retarded as shit. Have I just been canceled?
I always say these episodes are going to be my last episode.
So what are we saying if it's not retarded?
Just say it's stupid.
Don't say it's stupid, retarded. All right, I'm good. I'm done.
You're done.
I'm done.
All right, so yeah, if this was my last episode, because it could very well be my last episode, folks, I'm going under the knife.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going under the knife. I got to get surgery on the wrist. They are actually going to cut my wrist.
Here's how we're going to know how bad you are when I get home or when you get home. I'm going to be like, Jared, come upstairs with me. See how you get up there. Don't worry, I got you though.
And shout out to my people that's going to take care of me. But yeah, this could be my last episode for multiple reasons.
What happened? What happened?
What do you mean, why?
Why you get a surgery?
Because I broke my wrist.
God damn. On a motorcycle.
Yeah, we'll say it was a motorcycle. Yeah. I like that better. I like the motorcycle.
That's funny. I told somebody what happened. They're like, he's got to change that story though.
All right, this real quick. This
what it was a motorcycle.
This is what I don't leave get. It be. This is what I don't fucking
motorcycle.
Get. This is what I don't get. Right? Motorcycle. You ride a bike.
Yeah.
People ride bikes all the time.
All the time.
People fall off bikes all the time.
Every time.
People hurt themselves seriously on bikes all the time. Don't nobody say don't ever get on a bike again. I break my wrist. Now, you shouldn't be riding this. I don't know. People, skateboarders, everybody hurts themselves all the fucking time.
It's happened with me on the motorcycle too, though.
Yeah, but don't nobody be like, nah, you should never do that again.
Don't drive a car again.
Don't drive a car again. I'm saying, I had an accident. I'm hurting. I got to get surgery.
I encourage you to do all that shit that got you there in the first place.
As soon as I'm well enough, I'm back out there. I'm back out there. Just despite you, motherfucker. I'm petty. That's how petty I am. I thought petty wins
Who's
races.
Who's petty mayonnaise?
That was from Doug.
No, it's... Yeah, that was. That's right. Patty mayonnaise.
Yeah, I'm petty. So stop telling people that. Stop wishing harm on people. You need to not... It happens. Don't nobody laughing. Nobody falling off a bike. Shit happens.
Yeah, and... People don't talk shit about it when people fall.
They don't. That's why everybody talking shit about me because I was on a scooter, bro. Why you laugh harder when I say a scooter?
Not what kind of scooter you sit on?
Why did you laugh so much harder when I say a scooter, though? I don't get it.
It's a badass scooter, man. I've ridden it. That bitch is potent. Like, you know what I'm saying? I feared for my life a few times.
18 miles an hour don't sound fast until you fall off that motherfucker.
I mean, 16 for me and my weight, but whatever.
All right, but with all that said, I'm going to let y'all out of here. Zaya Fitness, my homie, MF's homie as well. Hit him up on Instagram. He doing mad. Like, the production value on his yoga videos and stuff is going way up. He got music and all kinds of shit.
He's handling that.
It's dope. He's still doing yoga on the roof. Black man doing yoga on the roof. How could you not support it? But Zayah Fitness on Instagram. Hit him up. He can get your fitness and your nutrition goals where they need to be. If you're looking for ways to be impactful, if you got a state that's pushing laws you don't agree with and you want to get involved politically or you want to understand what's going on politically, I guarantee you can get some good information at ttcharities.org. So please hit up the website, ttcharities.org. Donate what you can, time, money, books, clothes, a like, a retweet, whatever. It all goes to a good place and to be your brother's keeper in a safe, non-harmful way. And then as always, I got merch. I'm gonna claim it here because I'm gonna do it. I've put a bunch of new designs in the store, so it's gonna be hoodie season. Coupon code HOODIESZN will get you 20% off any hoodie in the store, and I got new hoodies that'll be going up at the same time this episode is posted. So whatistws.com/store, get your hoodies. I got some champion hoodies in there. I got regular hoodies for if you want a budget or however you want to do it. But they dope as fuck. But with that said, until we speak again, y'all be safe, be the light, be easy, and know this. Love y'all. Holla.
Last call for alcohol. Yeah. If this is it, like if this is the last joint, if this is the last hurrah, it's the last call for alcohol, baby. Gotta say, whether you knew it or not, it's pretty much at the finest bar establishment, the finest spirits and libations y'all could have had, baby. You might realize it now, you might have realized it back then, you might realize it later.
Love.